This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Birthday Girl. Written by Penelope Douglas. Performed by Andrew Iden and Jennifer Mack.
Chapter 1. Jordan. He's not answering. This is the second time I've called in 15 minutes, and I've been texting without any luck, too. Was he planning on still remembering to be here at 2? I end the call and glance up at the clock above the bar, seeing it's nearly midnight now. Still 2 hours before my boyfriend thinks I'm off work and need to be picked up. And here I thought we got a lucky surprise tonight, me getting off early. Shit. I need to get my car running. I can't keep relying on him for rides. The music fills the air around me, customers laughing to my right, and one of the other bartenders filling the cooler with ice to my left. Unease pricks at the back of my neck. If he's not answering, then he's either asleep or out. Both could mean he'll remember me after it's too late. He's not always unreliable, but this wouldn't be the first time either. That's the problem with making your friend your boyfriend, I guess. He still thinks he can get away with murder. I grab my shirt and school bag out of the cabinet underneath the taps and slide my phone into my pocket. I pull on a flannel over my tank top, button it up, and tuck the front of the hem into my jeans, covering myself. I'll dress a little sexy for tips, but I'm not about to walk out of here like this. "Where are you going?" Shell asks, peering at me as she draws a beer. I glance over at my boss, her black hair with blonde chunks piled on top of her head, and a string of tiny hearts tattooed around her upper arm. "There's a midnight showing of Evil Dead at the Grand Theater," I tell her as I close the cabinet and slide the strap of my leather satchel over my head. "I'll go kill time and wait for Cole there." She finishes pouring her beer and looks at me like there are a million things she wants to say but doesn't even know where to start. "Yeah, yeah, I know." I wish she'd stop looking at me like that. There's a good possibility Cole won't be here at 2 a.m., considering he's not answering the phone right now. I know that. He could be 3 sheets to the wind at some friend's house. Or he could be at home sleeping with the alarm set to come get me at 2, and his phone left in another room. It's not likely, but it's possible. He's got 2 hours. I'll give him 2 hours. Besides, my sister is at work, and no one here can leave to drive me home. Work is slow tonight, and I got cut early because I'm the only one without a child to support. Even though I desperately need the money just the same. I grip the strap of the bag over my chest, feeling like I should be older than 18. Well, 19 now, almost forgetting what today is. I take a deep breath, pushing the worry away for tonight. A lot of people my age struggle for money, can't pay bills, and have to bum rides. I know it's too much to expect that I'd have everything figured out by now, but it's still embarrassing. I hate looking helpless. And I can't blame Cole either. It was my decision to use what was left of my student loan money to help him fix his car. He's been there for me, too. At one time, we were all the other one had. Turning around, Shell sets the beer on the bar in front of Grady, one of the regulars, and takes his cash, shooting me another look as she enters the sale into the register. "You don't have a functioning vehicle," she states, "and it's dark outside. You can't walk to the theater. Sex slavers are just looking for hot teenage girls with blonde hair and shit." I snort. "You need to stop watching Lifetime movies." We might be an easy distance to some larger towns, and Chicago is only a few hours away, but we're still in the middle of nowhere. I lift up the partition and walk out from behind the bar. "The theater is right around the block," I tell her. "I'll make it in 10 seconds if I run like I'm being graded." I pat Grady on the back as I leave, the gray hair of his ponytail swaying as he turns to wink at me. "Bye, kiddo," he says. "Night." "Jordan, wait," Shell shouts over the jukebox, and I turn my head to look at her. I watch as she pulls a box out of the cooler along with a single serving box of wine and pushes them both across the bar at me. "Happy birthday," she says, smirking at me like she knows I probably think she forgot. I break into a smile and lift the small Krispy Kreme box open and see half a dozen donuts. It was all I could pick up in a hurry, she explains. Hey, it's cake. Kind of, I'm not complaining. I close the box and lift up the flap of my leather bag, hiding my loot inside, wine and all. I didn't expect anyone to get me anything, of course, but it's still nice to be remembered. Cam, my sister, will no doubt surprise me with a pretty shirt or a sexy pair of earrings tomorrow when I see her, and my dad will probably call me sometime this week. Shell knows how to make me laugh, though. I'm old enough to work in a bar, but not old enough to drink. Sneaking me some wine I can enjoy off the premises will be my little adventure tonight. Thank you, I say, and hop up on the bar, planting a kiss on her cheek. Be safe, she tells me. I nod once and spin around, heading out the wooden door and stepping out onto the sidewalk. The door shuts behind me, the music inside now a dull thrumming, and my chest caves, releasing the breath I didn't realize I'd been holding. I love her, but I wish she wouldn't worry about me. She looks at me like she's my mom and wants to fix everything. I guess I should have been so lucky as to have a mom like her. The welcome fresh air washes over me, the late-night chill sending goosebumps up my arms, and the fragrant scent of May flowers wafts through my nostrils. I tip my head back, close my eyes, and breathe in a lungful as my long bangs tickle my cheek in the light breeze. Hot summer nights are coming. I open my eyes and look left and then right, seeing the sidewalks are empty, but cars still line both sides of the street. The VFA parking lot is also full. Their bingo night usually turns into a bar scene this late, and it looks like the old-timers are still going strong. Turning left, I pull the rubber band out of my hair, letting the loose curls fall down, and slip the band around my wrist as I start walking. The night feels good, even though it is still a little crisp out. There's too much liquor in every crevice in there, seeping up into my nose all night. Too much noise and too many eyes as well. I pick up the pace, excited to disappear into the dark theater for a while. Normally I don't go alone, but when they're showing an older 80s flick like Evil Dead, I have to. Cole is all about special effects and doesn't trust films made before 1995. I smile, thinking about his quirks. He doesn't know what he's missing. The 80s were fantastic. It's a whole decade of just good fun. Not everything had to have a meaning or be deep. It's a welcome escape, especially tonight. Rounding the corner and making my way up to the ticket booth, I see I'm a few minutes early, which is great. I hate missing the trailers at the beginning. One, please, I tell the cashier. I fish out the wad of tips from my pocket that I made tonight and dole out the $7.50 for the ticket. Not that I have money to spare with rent coming due and a small pile of bills on Cole's in my desk back at our apartment that we can't pay yet, but it's not like $7 will make or break me. And it's my birthday, so... Walking inside, I bypass the concession stand and head for the next set of double doors. There's only one theater, and surprisingly, this place has survived for 60 years, even in the wake of the bigger 12-theater cinema centers built in the surrounding towns. The Grand had to get creative, with midnight showings of classic movies like tonight, but also dress-up events and private parties, too. I don't get down here much with my school and work schedule, but it's a nice, dark place when you want to get lost for a while. Private and quiet. Stepping through the doors, I check my phone one more time to see that Cole hasn't called or texted yet. I turn my ringer off and slide it back into my pocket. Some ads loop on the screen, but the house lights are still on, and I quickly scan the room, seeing a few loners spread out. There's also a couple sitting in the back row to my right, and a small group of guys are in the middle, young by the sound of their inconsiderately loud laughter. Out of about 300 seats, 285 are still available, and I pretty much have my pick. I walk down 5 or 6 rows, finding an empty one, and slide in, taking a seat midway in. I set down my bag and quietly pull out the purple box of wine, reading the label in the dim light. Merlot. I was hoping it was white wine, but I'm sure Shell needs to get rid of this stuff. We only serve it when there's an outdoor event and don't want glass outside. Unscrewing the cap, I sniff the pungent scent, not sensing any of the fancy aromas in the least that sommeliers seem to grasp from wine. No hint of oak with a bold aroma of sweet cherries or anything like that. Sliding my tray in front of me, I take advantage of the empty row ahead and bend up my knees, fitting my chucks in between the empty seats on the armrest. Setting the box down, I slip my phone out of my back pocket, just in case Cole calls, and plop it on the tray next to the wine. But instead, it spills off the tray. It falls down between my legs and onto the floor, and I jerk up my knees to try to catch it, but they bump the tray and send the open box of wine spilling to the floor. My mouth falls open, and I gasp. "Shit!" I blurt out in a whisper. "What the hell?" Planting my feet on the floor again, I push the tray off to the side and dive down to the floor, feeling around for my phone. My fingers dip in the spilled wine, and I flinch at the mess. Glancing up over the seats, I see the group of three guys a few rows down, dead ahead of me and right in line of the oncoming winefall. I groan. Great. A light layer of sweat cools my forehead, and I stand up, yanking my scarf out of my bag to dry off my fingers. I hate to ruin it, but I don't have any napkins. What a mess. So much for escaping for 2 hours. I look around for an usher with a light. Pretty positive this theater doesn't employ them, especially at this time of night. But the only flashlight I have is on my phone and the floors are dark. Seeing no one, I take my scarf and bag and travel up to the next row, bending down and peering under the seats to see if I can see my cell. When I find nothing, I move up to the next row, and then to the next, pretty sure I heard it slide a ways. Since the rows of seats are on a decline, it could have gone far, too. Damn it. Moving up to the next row, I set my stuff down and drop to my hands and knees, peering under the rows to my left and right, feeling with my hands. A pair of long, jean-clad legs sit ahead, and I look up, seeing a man sitting in the seat with fingers full of popcorn halfway to his mouth. He stares down at me with raised eyebrows. "I'm sorry," I whisper, tucking my hair behind my head. "I dropped my drink and my phone went sliding down here somewhere. Do you mind?" He hesitates a moment and then blinks, sitting up. "Yeah, sure." He moves his tray aside and stands up, digging something out of his pocket. "Here." He turns on the flashlight on his phone and squats down, shining it under the seats. Immediately, I spot my phone under the seat next to his and snatch it up. Thank goodness. We both stand up, and my shoulders relax. I can't afford a replacement right now. I smooth my fingers over the screen, making sure I don't feel any cracks. "Got it?" he asks. "Yeah, thank you." He kills his flashlight, but reaches over, swiping his fingers over the bottom of my phone, and brings them to his nose, smelling. "Is that?" he winces. "Wine?" I glance down at the floor, seeing he's standing in the drink I spilled three rows up. "Oh, jeez." I look up at him. "I'm so sorry. Is it everywhere?" "No, no, it's fine." He lets out a chuckle, his lips curving more to one side with his smile as he steps out of the mess. "I didn't realize they sold alcohol here." I grab my scarf and wipe off my phone. "Oh, they don't," I tell him quickly so I don't disturb others in the theater. "I just got off work. My boss gave it to me for, I shake my head, searching for words. "To, celebrate."
"Celebrate?"
"Shh," someone hisses. We both look to the guy one row back and far to the right, who's shooting us a glare out of the corner of his eye. Neither the trailers nor movie have started yet, and we're not in his line of sight, but I guess we're disturbing him. I move away back toward my bag. The man helping me picks up his drink and popcorn and follows, the faint scent of his body wash hitting me.
"I'm just going to scooch over out of the mess," he says.
He sits a few chairs down and glances up at me, and then back to where I was sitting when my phone and wine fell.
"You're welcome to sit."
He gestures to the seat next to him, probably figuring out I'm on my own tonight, too. "Thanks," I tell him. "I'll just go..." I don't finish. I back away and pick up my bag, turning to head to my own seat, when I see a guy and a girl enter the theater. I freeze, watching them veer left for the back row on the other side of the room and plop down in the seats. Shit. Jay McCabe. The only other boyfriend I've had other than Cole, and he makes Cole look like a prince. Unfortunately, he still loves to take a bite out of me any chance he gets, and there's no way in hell I'm dealing with him tonight.
You okay? The guy with the phone light asks when I don't move. I promise I'm not making a pass at you. You're too old for me.
I shoot him a look, forgetting about Jay and the girl for a moment.
Too old for him? What?
I take in his more than 6 feet of height, the outline of his muscles visible through his t-shirt, and his corded right forearm with a full sleeve of tattoos disappearing up his shirt. I've seen plenty of guys in the bar, and he doesn't look like any 19-year-old I've ever seen. He's gotta be at least, what, 30?
He snorts. I'm kidding, he says, his mouth spreading in a wide smile that makes my face fall a little. If you don't want to watch the movie alone, you're welcome to sit. That's all I meant.
I dart my gaze to Jay and whomever he's with, but then a group of guys suddenly push through the double doors, making a lot of noise as they enter the theater. I see Jay look away from the girl and toward the commotion, and I drop down in the seat next to the guy on instinct, not wanting Jay to see me. Thanks, I tell the guy next to me. I feel my ex's presence in the theater, and the old memories surface, reminding me of how helpless I let him make me feel at one time. I just want one night where I'm not thinking about everything. I sit back and try to relax, but then I peer out of the corner of my eye, the close proximity of a guy I don't know sitting next to me, suddenly, like a blazing bonfire, and impossible to ignore. I turn my head, eyeing him with apprehension.
You're not a serial killer, are you?
He pinches his eyebrows and looks at me.
Are you?
They're usually antisocial Caucasian men.
Good-looking male here all alone?
He arches a sharp eyebrow.
And they look just like everyone else, he adds,
suspicion in his voice as he looks me up and down. The light from the ads on the screen play in his eyes. Neither of us flinch, but I can't take it anymore. I break into a quiet chuckle. I finally hold out my hand to him. I'm Jordan. Sorry about the wine.
Jordan? He repeats, taking my hand and shaking it. Unusual name for a girl.
No, not really. I relax into the seat and fold my arms over my chest, lifting my knees and planting my shoes into the crevice between the two empty seats ahead of me. It was the name of Tom Cruise's love interest in Cocktail, remember? His eyebrows raise in question. Cocktail? I repeat. 1988 movie about flair bartending?
Oh, right.
But he has this unsure look in his eyes, and I'm not sure he knows what the hell I'm talking about. Do you like 80s movies? I ask, gesturing to the film that we're about to watch on the screen.
I like scary movies,
he clarifies and holds the popcorn over to me.
This one's a classic. You?
I love the 80s. I take a small handful and put a piece in my mouth. My boyfriend hates my taste in movies and music, but I can't resist. I'm here whenever they show something from the decade. I feel awkward slipping in a random mention of a boyfriend, but I don't want to give the wrong impression here. I quickly glance down at his left hand, thankfully not seeing a wedding ring. It would be wrong to sit here with a married guy. But he just looks at me knowingly.
Breakfast Club is your favorite, right? He says. And every other John Hughes creation?
You have something against the Breakfast Club?
Not the first 10 times I saw it, no.
A smile pulls at my lips. It is on TV a lot, I guess. He leans in.
The 80s was the age of the action hero, he points out, his deep voice close and hushed. People forget that. Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, The Terminator, Rambo.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, I add.
Exactly.
I bite the corner of my mouth so I don't laugh, but my stomach shakes anyway, and I let out a snort. He frowns.
What are you laughing at?
Nothing, I reply quickly, nodding. Van Damme, great actor. Very relevant films. I can't keep the laughter off my face, though, and he furrows his brow, knowing I'm full of shit. Just then, I hear a giggle somewhere behind me, and I turn my head over my shoulder, seeing Jay turned away from the screen and leaning into the girl, both of them full-on making out now.
You know them?
The man next to me asks. I shake my head. He doesn't need to know my business. We fall silent, and I finish the popcorn in my hand, letting my head fall back as I look up to the high ceiling and the antique gold arches overhead. He sits next to me, and I breathe in and out slowly, despite the hammering in my chest.
Why am I nervous? Is it Jay?
No, I'm not even thinking about him at the moment. People chat around us, waiting for the movie to start, but I can't hear what they're saying, and I don't really care. My skin feels warm.
So, what are you studying at Doral State?
He asks.
I shoot him a surprised look. How does he know where I go to school?
Serial killer. But then he gestures to my bag on the floor, and I see the keychain hanging off it with the university emblem emblazoned on the face.
Oh, duh.
I sit up. Landscape design, I tell him. I want to make outside spaces pretty.
That's nice. I work in construction.
I flash him a half smile. So you make inside spaces pretty then?
No, not really.
I laugh at his forlorn tone, like he's so bored with what he does.
I make them functional, he corrects me.
He turns hazel eyes on me, warm and piercing. But then his gaze drops to my mouth for a split moment, and a flutter hits my stomach. He quickly looks away, and I drop my eyes, having a hard time catching my breath. Clearing my throat, I bend down and pull out the box of donuts from my bag and place them on the tray, swinging the little table in front of me and lifting the lid. The sweet scent immediately hits my nose, and my stomach growls. I glance back at the projection window, wondering if the movie is starting soon, because I was saving these for that, but now I'm starving. I feel the guy's eyes on me, and I glance at him, explaining the donuts. It's my birthday. In addition to the wine, my boss gave me the only cake she could get at a drive-thru. I pick one up and lean back, putting my feet back on the armrest in front of me.
You're going to eat all 6 donuts?
He questions. I stop the pastry 2 inches from my mouth and glare at him. Would that disgust you or something?
No, I'm just wondering if I get one.
I smile and wave at the box, telling him to help himself. He picks up the plain glazed, and I'm not sure if he's the no-frills type or just trying to save the special sprinkle ones for me, but either way, I kind of like it. We sit back and eat, but I can't help stealing glances at him every once in a while. His brown hair is light, and his eyes look blue, green, or hazel, depending on what kind of light is flashing across them from the screen. He has a little stubble on his oval-shaped face, a sharp nose, and my gaze is drawn to the way his angular jaw flexes as he chews. There's the faintest of lines around his eyes, so he might be more than 30, but it could just be all his time working in the sun, too. He's tall, strong, fit, and tan. And his eyes suddenly flash to the side as if he senses me staring. I turn my eyes forward again. Damn it. That's okay, right? It's normal to find other people attractive. It happens. I mean, Scarlett Johansson is attractive. That doesn't mean I'm interested in her. I take another nibble of my donut, my gaze darting to the side again, taking in his arms and the various tattoos. Black gears and bolts, like a robot skeleton.
some tribal work that definitely says he was a 90s kid. And I can just make out what I think is a pocket watch that looks like it's trying to break free of his skin. It's like a hodgepodge without any discerning theme, but it's beautiful work. I wonder what the story is behind them. I take another bite, the pink glaze and rainbow sprinkles sending electric shocks to the back of my jaw and making me crave the whole damn thing in my mouth at once. You know, I really kind of want abs, I say, chewing. But these are really good. He breaks into a laugh, looking at me and chuckling. What? Nothing. You're just... He looks away as if searching for words. You're just kind of, like, interesting or something? He shakes his head. I'm sorry, I don't know what I mean. And then he blurts out, cute, as if just remembering. You're cute, I mean. My stomach flips, and heat warms my cheeks like I'm in fifth grade again, when it was such a compliment for a guy you like to tell you you're cute. I know he means my personality and not how I look, but I kind of like it. He finishes the donut and takes a sip of his soda. So, what are you? He asks. Like, 23, 24? Sure, eventually. He breathes out a laugh. 19, I finally answer. He takes a deep breath and sighs, something far off in his gaze. What? I take the last bite and brush my hands together, slouching and leaning my head back on the chair. To be that young again, he muses. Seems like yesterday. Well, how old could he be? 19 couldn't have been that long ago for him. 10 years? Maybe 12? So you'd do some things differently if you could go back? I inquire. He quirks a tight smile and looks down at me, his eyes serious. Let me tell you something. A little advice, okay? I listen, looking up at him, and my gaze locked with his. Hit the ground running, he tells me. Huh? He must see the confusion on my face, because he goes on. Time passes you like a bullet, he says, and fear gives you the excuses you're craving to not do the things you know you should. Don't doubt yourself. Don't second guess. Don't let fear hold you back. Don't be lazy. And don't base your decisions on how happy it will make others. Just go for it, okay? I stare up at him, and unfortunately, that's all I can seem to do. I want to smile because my heart is swelling and it feels good, but I'm also filled with something I can't place. It's like a dozen different emotions flooding in at once, and all I can manage are short, shallow breaths. Okay, I whisper to him. I'm not sure if what he said was what I wanted to hear or needed to hear, but I feel my shoulders square a bit and my chin rise with readiness. For however long it lasts, I'm a little braver, and he's my new hero. I watch as he pulls out a small box and proceeds to light a match, the small flame burning bright. He sticks it in one of the donuts, all the pink frosting Shell asked for, because she knows it's my favorite color, glowing in the light. I feel my heart warm at the gesture. Taking my feet down, I lean forward, close my eyes, and ask for what I want in my head, and then I blow out the flame. I didn't wish for what I usually wish for, though. My mind is suddenly blank, and I'm not remembering all the things I need and want right now outside of this theater. Just the only thing I can think of. We both sit back and settle in, each having another donut as the lights finally dim, and the surround sound hits us from both sides of the theater. Over the next 90 minutes, we eat and laugh, and I hide my face a couple times when I know something's coming. I jerk here and there, and laugh at him when he does too, because he looks embarrassed. After a while, I notice my head lays inclined toward him, and he has his foot up on the empty chair ahead of us, with his head laid back, as well. And we're completely comfortable. It hasn't even occurred to me to keep a certain distance. I don't watch a lot of movies with other people. I'm not used to just sitting in silence with someone else. Cole's and my schedules don't always mesh. My sister, Cam, doesn't have any free time anymore. And most of my high school friendships didn't last past graduation about a year ago. It's nice to hang out. By the time the credits roll, I'm not sure I remember much of the movie. But I haven't been this relaxed in a long time. I laughed and smiled and joked around and forgot everything that's going on out there, and I needed that. I don't really want to go home yet. The lights start to come up, and I slowly sit up, bringing my feet back to the floor as I swallow the lump in my throat and glance over at him. He sits up too, but barely meets my eyes. Standing up, I hook the strap of the bag over my head and pick up my garbage.
Well, they're showing Poltergeist in a few weeks, he says behind me, rising and taking his trash with him. If I see you, I'll make sure to sit at higher ground.
I laugh under my breath, thinking about the wine. We both exit the row and walk for the doors, and I notice Jay and his date aren't in their seats anymore. They must have left already, but truth be told, I forgot they were here a long time ago.
Poltergeist. Does that mean he'll be here then? Is that his way of nonchalantly letting me know in case I just happen to want to come too? But no, he knows I have a boyfriend. I can't help but think though, if for some reason Cole and I didn't make it another month, would I come to the movies then, knowing he'd be here? I blink long and hard, guilt washing over me as I trail up the aisle. I'd probably be here. There aren't a lot of catches in this town, and I had fun tonight. This guy is interesting. And good-looking. And employed. I should set him up with my older sister. How he's gone by undetected under her radar all this time is a mystery to me. We push through the door, the last ones out of the theater, and stop in the lobby, tossing away all our trash. I look up at him, my heart skipping a beat at seeing him in the brighter light and standing tall in front of me. Hazel eyes, definitely hazel, but more green around the outside of the irises. His hair is styled with minimal product and just long enough to run your fingers through, and I drop my eyes to his smooth tan neck. I can't see if there's a tan line under the collar of his t-shirt, though. Is he like that all over? An unbidden image of him, hammering and hauling lumber without a shirt on, flashes in my mind, and I close my eyes again, shaking my head.
Yeah, whoa, okay.
I'd better head back, I tell him, gripping the strap of my bag. Hopefully my boyfriend is waiting at the bar to pick me up by now.
Bar?
Grounders, I answer, thinking he probably should know the place. It's one of only three bars in town, although many favor Poor Red's or the strip club over the dive I work at. I got off a little early tonight, unexpectedly, but he's my ride, and I couldn't get a hold of him. He should be there now, though. He pushes the door open, holding it for me as I leave the theater, and follows me out.
Well, I hope you had a good birthday, despite having to work, he says.
I move to the right toward where Grounders is, and he veers left. And thanks for keeping me company, I tell him. I hope I didn't ruin the movie for you. He gazes at me for a moment, his breath growing heavier as a torn look crosses his face. Finally, he shakes his head, averting his eyes.
Not at all, he says.
A moment of silence passes, and slowly, we both steer farther apart, but neither of us turns our backs on one another. The silence gets longer, the distance farther, and finally, he raises a hand, giving me a little wave before hooking both hands in his back pockets.
Good night, he says.
I just stare at him. Yeah, good night. And then I turn away, my stomach twisting into a tighter knot.
I didn't even get his name.
It'd be nice to say hi if I run into him again. I don't have time to dwell, though, because my phone rings, and I slide it out of my pocket, seeing Cole's name on the screen.
I stop on the sidewalk and answer it. Hey, you at Grounders? I ask him. I'm almost there. He doesn't say anything, though, and I pause, calling his name. Cole? Hey, are you there? Nothing. Cole? I say louder. But the line is dead. I go to call him back, but I hear a voice behind me.
Your boyfriend's name is Cole?
The man from the theater asks.
Cole Lawson?
I turn around to see him slowly walking back toward me.
Yeah, I say, you know him?
He hesitates for a moment, as if coming to terms with something. And then he holds out his hand, finally introducing himself.
I'm Pike. Pike Lawson.
Lawson? He pauses a moment and then adds, his father. My lungs empty.
What?
I breathe out.
His father.
My mouth falls open, but I clamp it shut again, looking up at this man with new eyes as realization dawns. Cole has talked about his father in passing. I knew he lived in the area, but they're not close from what I understand. The impression I had of Cole's father from his son's brief mentions doesn't match the guy I talked to in the theater tonight. He's nice. And easy to talk to. And he hardly looks old enough to have a 19-year-old son, for crying out loud.
His father?
I say out loud. He gives me a curt smile, and I know this is the turn of events he wasn't expecting either. I hear his cell vibrate in his pocket next, and he digs it out, checking the screen.
And if he's calling me now, he must be in trouble, he says, staring at the phone. Need a lift?
A lift where?
Police station, I'd assume.
He sighs, answering the phone and leading the way.
Let's go.
Chapter 2. Jordan. I don't think this is a good idea, I tell Cole, pulling out my stacked milk crates from the back of his car. I feel like a freeloader. My boyfriend brandishes that quirky tilt to his lips where you only see the left side of his teeth.
So what are you gonna do then?
He looks up at me, sliding my collapsible drafting table toward him and lifting it up.
Stay at your parents'?
His blue eyes are hooded, probably from the lack of sleep, as we both walk over and set our loads on the front porch steps to Pike Lawson's house. Our new home. The past few days have been crazy, and I can't believe that guy is his father. What are the chances? I wish we'd met a little differently. Not driving down to the police station at 2 o'clock in the morning to get his son, my boyfriend, out of jail.
Come on, I told you,
Cole says, walking back to the car for another load.
My dad was the one who offered to let us stay here. We just chip in on chores, and this gives us a chance to save up for a new place. A better place.
Right. And how many kids move back home to do just that and end up staying for another 3 years instead? His dad had to know what he was opening himself up to. I'll make every effort to be gone as soon as possible, but Cole doesn't save money. Setting up a new place with a deposit, which we lost at the previous apartment due to minor damages to the carpets, and utilities will take substantial cash. Once we get a place, Cole can help pay for it, but actually getting in there and set up will be on me. It's been 3 days since the theater and meeting Pike Lawson. Once we got Cole out, I came home to find our apartment completely trashed. Apparently, he was trying to throw me a late birthday party at our place, but our friends, his friends, didn't wait to start the festivities. By 11, everyone was drunk, the pizza was gone, but hey, they saved me a piece of cake. I had to go into the bathroom so I wouldn't cry in front of them when I saw the place. Apparently, a fight started during the party. Neighbors complained about the noise. Cole mouthed off, and he and another one of his buddies were taken in to cool down. Mel, the landlord, stated in no uncertain terms that he'd had enough, and Cole had to go. I was welcome to stay, but there was no way I could pay for everything by myself. Not after I'd already drained my savings, helping repair his car last month. And thank goodness the cops let him go without bail this time, because I didn't have $100 to squeeze out of anywhere, much less $2,500. You're his son, I remind Cole, grabbing my floor lamp, one of the only big things we didn't put into storage, since Cole's dad already had one of the spare bedrooms furnished. But me staying here too, with him paying all the bills? It's not right.
Well, I don't think it's right for me to have to go without this every day.
He teases with a cocky grin as he pulls me to him and wraps his arms around my body. I release the lamp and smile, indulging his playfulness, even though I'm feeling out of sorts. It's been a long time since I've been at ease long enough to forget the stress hitting us at every turn. We haven't smiled together in a while, and it's starting to not come naturally anymore. But right now, he has that boyish glint to his eyes like he's just the most adorable tornado and don't you just love me. He plants his forehead to mine, and I thread my fingers through the back of his blonde hair and look up into his dark blue eyes that always give the impression that he just remembered he has a whole pie waiting in the refrigerator. Taking my right hand in his, he pulls both up between us, and I clasp his in mine, already knowing what he's doing. Our fingers wrap around the other's hand, our thumbs side by side, and he holds my eyes, the same memories passing between us. To anyone else, it looks like an arm wrestling grip, but when we look down, we see our thumbs side by side, and the small, pea-sized scar we both have and share with only one other person. It's silly when we tell the story. A friend's little brother's Nerf gun that was too small for our hands, and we got skinned when we tried to use it, all three of us laughing when we realized that we had the exact same scar at the head of our metacarpals. Now, it's just Cole and me. Just the two of us. Two scars, no longer three.
Stay with me, okay? He whispers. I need you.
And for a rare moment, I see vulnerability. I needed him, too, once, and he was there. We've been through a lot, and he's probably my best friend. Which is why I'm too forgiving with him. I don't want him to hurt. And which is why I let him talk me into this. I really don't want to move in with my dad and stepmom. And it's just until the end of the summer. Once my student loans come in for the fall, and I've saved up from working this summer, I can afford my own place again. I think. Cole holds me tight and remains quiet. He knows I'm still mad at him about getting arrested and the damage to the apartment. But he knows I care. I'm starting to wonder if it's one of my faults. Definitely my weakness. He reaches down and cups my ass, diving into my neck and kissing me. I gasp as he presses himself into me, and I laugh, squirming out of his arms. Stop! I scold in a whisper as I glance nervously to the two-story house behind me. We don't have privacy anymore. He smirks.
My dad's still at work, babe. He won't be home until around 5.
Oh, well, that's good at least. I look up and down the neighborhood street, though, seeing house after house, curtains open, and kids playing here and there. It's not like the apartments where everyone sees your business but doesn't really care, because you're transient and won't stick around long enough for anyone to think you're worth their attention. Here, in a real neighborhood, people invest their time in who lives next door. I take a deep breath, soaking in the smell of grills and the sound of lawnmowers. It's a really nice neighborhood. I wonder if this could be me someday. Will I find a great job? Have a nice house? Will I be happy? Cole bows his forehead to mine again.
I'm sorry, you know.
He doesn't look at me, staring at the ground.
I keep screwing up, and I don't know why. I'm just so restless. I just can't.
But he doesn't finish. He just shakes his head, and I know.
I always know. Cole isn't a loser. He's 19, impulsive, angry, and confused. But unlike me, he never had to grow up. There's always someone taking care of him. You know who you're meant to be, I tell him. Committing to it is a different process for everyone. But you'll get there. He raises his eyes, and a moment of hesitance crosses his gaze like he's going to say something, but then it's gone. He flashes his cocky little grin instead. I don't deserve you, he says, and then he slaps me on the ass. I jerk, holding in my annoyance as we let go of each other. No, you don't. But you're cute, and you give good massages. We finish unloading the car and make several trips back and forth, carrying everything into the house. I drop off the few groceries I bought earlier into the kitchen, and then carry one last box through the living room and up the stairs to our room, first door on the left. I inhale a deep breath through my nose as I round the doorway into our new bedroom, unable to hide my smile at the smell of fresh paint. From the looks of the house we're moving into, Cole's father is renovating, although it seems like the bulk of the major work is done. There were gleaming hardwood floors downstairs, matching crown molding in every room, granite countertops in the kitchen with all new-looking chrome appliances, and the black and glass cabinetry kind of made my heart flutter a little. I had never lived in a place even remotely this nice. For a construction worker, Pike Lawson wasn't a bad designer. It's definitely a nice house. A really nice place, in fact. Not that it's a mansion, just a simple two-story Craftsman with a small walk-up porch leading to the front door. But it's redone, beautiful, well-kept, and the front and backyards are green. I set the box down and walk to the window, peeking between the blinds. An actual yard. Cole's mom's living situation wasn't always great, so it's nice to know he has a clean, safe neighborhood here whenever he needs. I wonder why he always made it seem like he needed someone to take care of him when he had this anytime he wanted. What is up with him and Pike Lawson? Someday, I'm going to have a place like this too. My father, unfortunately, will die in that trailer I grew up in. Cole walks in, swinging a couple suitcases onto the bed, and immediately leaves again, digging out his phone on his way out. Do you think your dad will mind if I use the kitchen? I call, following him out of the room. I got stuff to make burgers. He keeps walking, but I hear his breathy laugh. I can't imagine any guy, even my dad, is going to say a woman can't use his kitchen to make him a meal, babe. Yeah, right. I shoot a look at his back as he takes a right into the living room and heads outside. I keep going straight into the kitchen. I used to like doing things for Cole, being there for him better than my mother was for my father, keeping a clean house or apartment, and seeing him smile when I made his life a little bit easier or made sure he had what he needed. It's gotten one-sided over the past few months, though. His father is doing a lot for us, though, and cooking a few nights a week is part of the arrangement, so I have no problem keeping my end of the deal. Well, our end of the deal. But Cole isn't going to cook, so I'll leave the yard work to him, which his father also stipulated was his responsibility to keep up. Pike Lawson. I've had to make an effort to not think about the theater the other night. It's still hard to wrap my head around the randomness of the whole situation. I keep thinking about the matchstick and the donut, and the pep talk he gave me about going after what I want. Part of me, though, feels like he was saying those things to himself, too. Experience and maybe a little disappointment laced his tone. And I want to know more about him. Like, what he was like as a young father. And so I thought he was cute. So what? I think Chris Hemsworth is cute. And Ryan Gosling, Tom Hardy, Henry Cavill, Jason Momoa, the Winchester brothers. It's not like I had sexual thoughts for crying out loud. It doesn't have to be awkward. It can't be. I'm with his son. Walking over to one of the chairs at the kitchen table, I dig my phone out of my bag and start my app,
Jessie's girl, immediately playing where it left off after my run this morning. I do a scan of the kitchen, as well as a quick peek back into the living room, making sure none of our things are laying around. I don't want his dad inconvenienced any more than he already is. I walk to the fridge, running my hand over the island countertop as I pass by. While the other counters are a tan granite with accents of black, the island top is made of butcher block. The smooth wood is warm under my fingertips, and I don't feel any grooves from carving. The whole kitchen looks recently redone, so maybe he hasn't used the cutting board much. Or maybe he isn't a big cook. A practical, bronze metal light fixture hangs over the island, and I do a little twirl before reaching the refrigerator, laughing under my breath. It's nice to be able to move without bumping into something. The only thing this kitchen needs that would make me go from an impressed nod to fanning myself in heat would be some backsplash. Backsplash is hot. Reaching into the refrigerator, I pull out the ground beef, butter, and mozzarella, kicking the door closed with my foot as I turn around and set everything on the island. I pick up the two onions I left on the counter before and bob my head to the music, sliding and swaying, as I grab a butcher knife from the block and start chopping both into the thin slices. The music in my ears builds, the hair on my arms rises, and I feel a burst of energy in my legs, because I want to dance, but I won't let myself. I hope Pike Lawson is okay with 80s music in his house from time to time. He didn't say he didn't like it in the theater, but he didn't also bank on us living with him. I stick to lip-syncing and head-banging while I form five large patties in my hands and start to add them to a clean pan, already heated and layered with melted butter. My hips are rolling from side to side when I feel a tickle making its way around my waist. I jump, my heart leaping into my chest as a gasp lodges in my throat. Spinning around, I see my sister behind me. "Cam!" I whine. "Gotcha," she teases, grinning ear to ear and jabbing me in the ribs again. I pause the music on my phone. "How'd you get in? I didn't hear the bell." She walks back around the island and sits at a stool, resting her elbows down and picking up an onion ring. "I passed Cole outside," she explained. "He told me to just come in." I arch my neck, peering out of the window and seeing him and a couple of his friends circle my grandma's old VW that Cole's dad paid to have towed here since it doesn't run right now. I couldn't leave it at the apartment, and Cole looks like he's finally making good on his promise to fix it, so I can have a car. The sizzle of the meat frying in the pan hits my ears, and I turn around flipping the burgers. A speckle of grease hits my forearm and I wince at the sting. I know Cam's here to check up on me. Old habits and that. My sister is only 4 years older, but she was the mom our mom didn't stick around to be. I stayed in that trailer park until I graduated high school, but Cam left when she was 16 and has been on her own ever since. Just her and her son. I glanced at the clock, seeing it was just after 5. My nephew must be with the sitter by now, and she must be on her way to work. "So, where's the father?" she asks me. "Still at work, I suppose." "He'll be home soon, though." I transfer the burgers from the pan to the plate and take out the buns, opening up the package. "Is he nice?" she finally asks, sounding hesitant. I have my back turned to her, so she can't see my annoyance. My sister is a woman who doesn't mince words. The fact that she's guarding her tone says she's probably having thoughts I don't want to hear. Like, why the hell am I not just taking the higher-paying job her boss offered me last fall so I can stay in my apartment? "He seems nice," I nod, casting her a glance. "Kind of quiet, I think." "You're quiet." I shoot her a smirk, correcting her. "I'm serious. There's a difference." She snickers and sits up straight, pulling down the hem of her white tank top, the red, lace bra underneath very well visible. "Someone had to be serious in our house, I guess." In our house, growing up, she means. She flips her brown hair behind her shoulder
and I see the long silver earrings she wears that matches her glittery makeup, smoky eyes, and shiny lips. "How's Killian?" I ask, remembering my nephew. "A brat, as usual," she says, but then stops, like she remembers something. "No, wait, today, he told me he tells his friends I'm his big sister when I come to get him from daycare," she scoffs. "The little shit is embarrassed by me, but still, I was like, whoa, people actually believe that?" And then she flips her hair again, putting on a show. "I mean, I still look good, don't I?" "You're only 23. I top the burger with shredded mozzarella, add another patty, and top that as well. "Of course you do." "Mm-hmm," she snaps her fingers. "Gotta make that money while I can." I meet her eyes, and it's only for a moment, but it's long enough to see the falter in her humor. The way her bemused smile looks like an apology, and how she blinks, filling the silence as her awkward words hang in the air. And how she pulls the hem of her top down to cover as much of her stomach as she can in the presence of her little sister. My sister hates what she does for a living, but she likes the money more. She finally turns her attention back to me, her tone sounding almost accusing. "So, what are you doing, by the way?" "Making dinner." She shakes her head, rolling her eyes. "So not only do you not cut loose the male you're with, but now you're waiting hand and foot on another one?" I place a couple onion rings on the first double cheeseburger and top it with a bun. "I am not." "Yes, you are." I glare at her. "We're staying here, in this fabulous neighborhood, mind you, rent-free. The least I can do is make sure we keep our end of the bargain. We clean up and share some of the cooking duties, that's all." Her right eyebrow arches sternly, and she crosses her arms over her chest, not buying it. Oh, for crying out loud. I actually think we're getting the better end of this bargain than Pike Lawson, after all. Central air, cable and Wi-Fi, a walk-in closet? I reach over the counter and pull the blinds up, barking to get her off my back. "He has a pool, Cam. I mean, come on." Her eyes go wide. "No shit." She pops out of her chair and scurries over, peering into the backyard. The pool is perfect, shaped like an hourglass. The multicolored tiles on the deck are Mediterranean style, and it has a walk-in entry with a mosaic floor. Cole's dad must still be working on it, because there's a display on the far end of the pool with flowerless flower beds and sprouts for mini waterfalls that aren't running yet. There's a table and chairs placed haphazardly around the perimeter, and the rest of the grassy backyard has various lawn furniture not yet set up in any discernible way. A table umbrella lays to the right, next to the hose, and a barbecue grill sits covered with a tarp to the left. My sister nods approvingly. "This is nice. You were always meant to live in a house like this." "Who isn't?" I shoot back. "Everyone should be so lucky." Although it still feels wrong being here. I care a lot about Cole, though, and I'd rather be with him than at my dad's. I finish up the burgers while she turns around, gripping the counter at her sides and stares at me. "You sure all he wants is a little cleaning and cooking?" she presses. "Men, no matter what age, are all the same. I should know." "Yeah, you can shut up now. I can take care of myself. If high school boyfriends and working in a bar haven't taught me that by now." But she speaks up again, moving into my space and stopping me. "Just listen to me for a second." Her tone turns firm. "It's a nice house, a safe neighborhood, and yes, you can save up a little money. But you don't have to stay here." "It's not Dad and Corinne's, so there's that," I argue back. "And I can't stay with you. I appreciate the offer, but I can't be on the couch in everyone's way and be able to study with a 4-year-old trying to be a kid in his own house. I have a summer class on Thursdays, so I need some space to work." "That's not what I meant," she quickly retorts. "You could have stayed in that apartment. You could have afforded it." I open my mouth, but shut it again, turning around to slip the burgers into the oven for a few minutes. Not this again. When is she going to give it up?
I can't, okay? I tell her. I don't want to. I like my job, and I don't want to work where you work.